listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and my co-host extraordinaire, psychologist Dr. Melody Fox, will be here soon. For those that don't know, our studios are in Los Angeles, and she is in Los Angeles traffic. But don't worry, she will be here soon. And I want everybody to know that each week we will bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. And each week, we will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Today, as we all know, it's really hard to get away from digital media. That is the topic that we're going to talk about today, because what digital media does is it offers a portal to an unregulated universe. And be it if you're a husband, a wife, if you have children, or you are part of any form of a blended family, we know that we all have access to material that we may not necessarily want in our home, yet we find that controlling it can be extremely difficult. Now, we have choices. We can put our heads in the sand and pretend that there's nothing to worry about, or we can educate ourselves about the risks and take the necessary steps to keep our families safe. Now, this requires understanding the appropriate role of digital technology in our lives and in the lives of our children. Now, depending on their stages of development, learning how to set and hold effective and appropriate limits on technology use and understanding what is healthy for ourselves, for our children, and for our partners, we also need to understand that marital health requires understanding as well, and maintaining appropriate limits of the use of gaming and of the internet. Now, fortunately, to discuss these limits, our guest today is Hilary Cash. She's a PhD who is well recognized as a pioneer in the emerging field of internet addiction. Now, in 1999, she co-founded the Internet Computer Addiction Services, which is an outpatient clinic in Redmond, Washington. In 2008, she co-authored Video Games and Your Kids. It was a How Parents Stay in Control. And in 2009, she co-founded Restart, Internet Addiction Recovery Program, the only therapeutic retreat center of its kind in North America, or at least that I'm aware of. Dr. Cash, welcome to Answers for the Family.
My pleasure to be here.
Well, it is great to have you here. Now, for those that don't know, we met at a conference, and I was so impressed with the fact that that you really have a lot of information, have done a lot of research, and I think you're right on the cutting edge of a problem that is going to only get worse if we really don't pay attention.
No, I agree.
Now, for those that aren't aware of this, I mean, tell us a little bit about internet addiction and some of the differences in regards to, as it relates to video games versus other parts of addiction. Is it necessarily just the addiction of being on the internet, or is it the specific games or pornography or whatever it is that they're tuning into?
I think maybe the best way to start understanding this is to recognize that all addictions, whether they are behavioral addictions or chemical addictions, essentially involve the same neurobiology. So when we find something that elevates the neurochemicals like dopamine and the opiates that the brain releases, and we are able to sustain that, do it too much for too long, then we are at risk for addiction to that thing. Drugs and alcohol can do that, and there are behaviors that can do that as well. The internet happens to be a really good sort of drug delivery system for behaviors that produce that release of dopamine, opiates, and other neurochemicals that give people a high. It might be kind of a mild high, but it's a high nonetheless. And because of how the internet works and kind of the way our society operates, we can engage in these behaviors that give us this neurochemical high for a prolonged period of time. And being able to do that then sets up changes in the brain leading to tolerance and the experience of withdrawal, all of which are part of this, of what we call an addiction. So the applications on the internet that people find highly addictive vary. For some people, it's sex. For other people, it's romantic, the pursuit of romance. For others, it is playing video games, which can be highly engaging and entertaining. For others, it's shopping, gambling, day trading. So there are many different things that people do. And if it's that thing that floats your boat and gives you a high, well, that's the thing that you run the potential of getting addicted to.
So what you're saying is the common denominator is the dopamine?
Yes, dopamine among other neurochemicals.
Okay. Now, as a parent of two teenagers, and a lot of the listeners that we have out there are also parents of teenagers, what are some of the signs of internet or video game addiction?
Think of it this way. Again, all addictions have certain commonalities, and one of them is, as I said, the experience of a high, a what we would call a euphoria, but it might just be a sense of great pleasure. So all addictions, at least in the beginning, have that effect. Then over time we develop tolerance. We can experience withdrawal, and then we engage in this behavior in spite of its negative consequences. So when it comes to the internet, whatever application gives you the high, that's what you're going to be pursuing. Over time, let's talk from, just as an example, let's talk about video game play. Pretty quickly, playing for just an hour isn't going to be sufficient to any longer give your teenager satisfaction. And so then that teen is going to want to play more in order to get satisfaction. And then pretty soon, that's not enough either. The 2 hours isn't enough, and then they want to push the limit and go beyond that. And so it goes. So that's the development of tolerance. And then if you, the parent, are taking away, you see that there's a problem developing here, and so you say no more video gaming, well, that teen is possibly going to go into withdrawal. And the withdrawal symptoms are anger, irritability, restlessness, poor concentration, complaints about being very bored. They don't know what to do with themselves for a while until those symptoms of withdrawal remit. If the teen is not, if you, the parent, aren't setting those limits and the teen is able to get into a deep addiction, they are going to be in denial about it, usually. They, you know, saying to themselves and to you, I don't have a problem.
Right.
Even though they do. And they're going to be engaging in this behavior, let's say it's video gaming, in spite of negative consequences. So negative consequences very typically are going to be loss of sleep,
mm-hmm.
beginning to engage in behaviors that are actually go against their own moral compass, like starting to lie and be deceitful, perhaps stealing your credit card in order to buy things that they want for their game. Their grades will start to go down. They withdraw from their friends and activities that they used to enjoy. But they don't care. They're focused on that thing that gives them, you know, that thing to which they're addicted. So in spite of these negative consequences that other people are noting, the addicted teen is going to be in denial about it and continue in the behavior in spite of these problems. And often the problems are physical, like the inability to get an adequate sleep, or back pain, carpal tunnel syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
So, does that answer your question?
Well, yes, it does. And what you've described sounds a lot like the same things that we've all been taught over the years in regards to alcoholism or drug addiction.
That's right.
So you're saying that the similarities are there from the standpoint of the things that they will do or the things that they will give up to continue to do that they're now addicted to.
Absolutely.
Now, what about using, and I guess this is obviously hopefully before it gets to the point of an addiction, but using it as a tool. In other words, you know, to earn an hour on the computer, you need to have completed an hour's worth of homework or something along those lines.
I think that it is essential that parents understand that definitely their ability to control the amount of their teenagers' access to the computer. You know, parents have control over cars, computers, cell phones.
Right.
Those are sort of the three big things that teens generally want,
mm-hmm.
and that parents still have control over if parents take adequate action. And so the message needs to be there are things that you are responsible for, and you have to demonstrate your responsibility before you're going to have the privilege of these things that you want. So you can set it up that, for instance, they have to get their homework done before they have access to other things on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take that approach, though, it is complicated, and you have to have a way of monitoring what they do, because it's very easy, as you are, I'm sure, well aware, that teens, when they're sitting at a computer doing their homework, are also, you know, chatting with their friends, you know, surfing the web, doing
sure.
other things as well.
Exactly.
And so saying to your teen, actually, I want you to do things. I don't want you to multitask. I want you to just get your homework done, and or at least work for an hour. Then you can take a little break for 15 minutes and spend 15 minutes chatting with your friends. Then back to your homework. And the way I'm going to know if you are following this rule that I've set is I have monitoring software installed on the computer,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to check and make sure that you adhere to this rule that you're not going to be multitasking. You have to just be focused on your homework. And therefore, think of this computer not as public as private space. It is public, and I have access to what you do.
Very good. Yeah, and we've talked about that in the past, where parents have called in and talked about their children getting on and contacting strangers. You know, so there are
mm-hmm.
other concerns out there with the computer. And one of the things that we talked about during that show was having the computer in an open space. You know, not something
that's yeah.
in their bedroom and they have a locked door.
Nope, not good.
Exactly.
Now, absolutely.
Now, one of the questions that I know that I've been asked is, you know, are there some people who are more susceptible than others to becoming addicted? And if so, who and why?
The best way to think about this is to say even perfectly normal people who have no predisposing kind of conditions, which I will talk about, if even very normal kids and teenagers have vulnerability to this, because childhood and particularly the adolescent years are extremely emotionally challenging. And so if you are a kid who doesn't have a lot of confidence, you haven't already experienced a lot of social success, one of the ways you can just escape the challenges of adolescence is by running away to cyberspace, where you can more easily experience success, like in a video game, let's say. And so any teen is vulnerable. Now, their vulnerability increases the earlier they start with internet use and video game play. So if you've got a kid who's been spending time doing in these activities since he or she was 3 years old, that is a kid who's going to be much more vulnerable to addiction later, because the brain is already wired for that, and they have already fallen behind potentially developmentally in other areas. So that increases vulnerability. A kid who is left alone and is therefore feeling lonely and bored is much more vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
A kid where the home environment is fraught with anxiety and pain because parents are divorcing, parents fight, somebody in the home is abusive physically, emotionally, sexually, all of these conditions greatly increase the risk. If this is a kid who is bullied, is picked on at school, again, that increases the possibilities of addiction, for addiction. And then there are certain psychological conditions which definitely predispose kids. And one of them is this condition called Asperger's that many people may be familiar with. It's on the autism spectrum, but it's very high functioning. But those are kids who don't read well social cues, and as a result, they do tend to be picked on and not to feel very successful socially. They're often much more vulnerable. Kids with attention deficit disorder are also more vulnerable because the way the internet works and video game play works, it's stimulating, first of all, and stimulants kind of help kids with ADD to focus, and so they like the stimulation of it. The way their brains work, which is kind of with short attention span, is well suited to the short attention span requirements of most things on the internet surfing, playing video games, and so forth. So they're more vulnerable. Kids who have a natural high level of anxiety or depression are more vulnerable. So all of these things make kids more vulnerable.
Right, and it sounds like many of the things that you're talking about, all of which are escapes, they're escaping from whatever it is that's going on at that time. And
something painful.
Yes, exactly. I want to take this time for a minute, Dr. Cash, let me introduce you to our co-host, Dr. Melody Fox.
Hello, Dr. Cash. I do apologize for the traffic that kept me from getting here on time today.
Hello, Dr. Fox. I'm just glad you're here, safe and sound.
Well, I am thrilled about the topic you're talking about today, and I have been listening to the last couple of questions that you were answering, and, you know, it is so true that it's so addictive. But how do you work with kids when in the schools they're teaching them to be on the computers, they're doing computer games to help their learning, and yet you don't want them to become so lost in that world that they can't function outside of it?
Well, I'm not pleased with the trend to have kids spending more and more time with their computers in the schools. And schools are, you know, there are certain schools that require kids to have laptops at, you know, even in elementary school. I don't agree with this trend, but it is here, you know, and we have to deal with it. So educating educators and parents and kids, educating everyone involved about what are the healthy boundaries that, if adhered to, will allow kids to use computers and the internet in a way that doesn't interfere with their normal child development and doesn't lead them in the direction of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a matter of educating everybody.
Right. And Dr. Cash, I just thought of something. As you were saying that, do you see a correlation between the when television was brought into our lives to now computers being brought into our lives. Because I can remember at a time as a child wanting to sit in front of the TV and my father saying, you know, that's it. That's too much time sitting in front of the idiot box. It's just going to make you stupid. and obviously, you know, television became something that was here to stay. Computers are here to stay. So, yeah, I think the focus is going to be, it is going to be a part of our lives. How can we utilize it for its greater good and minimize the negative effects it's going to have on us?
Exactly so. And that's the challenge. Because I think there are days when I wake up feeling very optimistic and thinking, yeah, we're going to totally figure this out. And, you know, it's early days yet, and, you know, just with automobiles, we had the early automobiles didn't come with seat belts and airbags and speed limits and all of those things, and we learned through the pain of car accidents, and, you know, it's been a slow process, but over the last 100 years, we've really figured out not how to save everybody from an accident, but how, in general, people can use cars safely. So sometimes I think that's just is going to exactly be what happens here. We just aren't, it's early days yet. We haven't figured out how to keep safe with this intense technology. On other days, I think that I feel somewhat pessimistic, and I worry that we're going to just be swept away in the current. And perhaps not learn the lessons we need to learn. So, you know, I don't know the future.
Yeah, I was just curious, too. I was wondering if playing the video games or spending time on the Internet makes a child smarter, or does playing these games also or not increase desensitization of their tolerance for violence in their lives and the community and those around them?
Well, I think that there is really pretty clear evidence that, in fact, there was just a really recent study released that showed a 40% decrease in empathy among video game players when they played violent video games as opposed to nonviolent video games. And this was college students that they were testing. So, you know, think about a 40% decrease in empathy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that violence has been shown, you know, through all the research done with television and also research that's going forward with video game play. We definitely become desensitized to violence. The video game play is actually far more influential than television because you actually are in the role of taking the action, the violent action, mm-hmm. in these games, right? You're an active participant in the violence. And so I think it's pretty clear that it does, in fact, increase either desensitivity to it or increase, you know, what is the right word? Decrease sensitivity to violence. And, in fact, can increase the potential for violence in kids who are so inclined.
Well,
that's just a question of violence. I mean, there are plenty of other things we could talk about as well.
Right. I was just thinking when you were talking about that on how graphic some of those games are. I've come across them in other people's homes, and I won't watch some of them because they're just too graphic and upsetting for me to watch. They are
right.
Just so violent. And and to think these people let their children watch these and play these games, too, is very disturbing to me. I was curious, too, if the, I know with ADD and all that, sometimes they use computer games to help teach people to focus. I was wondering if obsessive gaming or computer use could also interfere with normal brain development as opposed to using as a tool to help.
Oh, I think by far the evidence, I think it's very clear that excessive gaming interferes with normal development. In moderation, gaming in moderation, if parents maintain control over time and content. And so make sure that the content of the games their kids are playing is content that they are comfortable with and really approve of, rather than just ignoring it and pretending not to notice. And make sure that the time is limited in an age-appropriate way. Then gaming can just be, you know, a bit of entertainment for a kid and of no consequence. But once it becomes excessive, it really does start interfering with healthy child development.
Well, and I think you're right. And I know that one of the things that we do in our home, and or we did, I mean, based on it being age appropriate, is that the games are set with an M or a T, you know, or a G, I guess, you know, and based on that rating, somebody else has already checked it out and said, okay, this might be good for teens, or it might be good for a more mature player. So recognizing those and making that decision, I think, is important for parents. But also, just the fact that we added in is that if it's a game to where there is a form of killing, that we're not going to have it to where it is humans that are being killed. If there is red blood that is happening, you know, if you're going to have breaking up robots or something like that, that's different, you know. Mm-hmm. So something like that, we allowed that to start happening sooner than we did any sort of war-type game to where you were actually killing humans, and I think that's part of that desensitization that you're talking about.
Right, right. There's research out of the University of Washington by a guy named Christakis, who has shown, he's demonstrated very clearly that toddlers, parents of toddlers are marketed to by the developers of a genre called Lapware. Baby Einstein would be an example of this. And he's demonstrated that the vocabulary development in children who spend time with those video games goes down compared to their peers who are not playing those video games.
Wow.
You know, very steadily. So for every hour on the game, he can predict how much of a sort of loss in vocabulary development a child will demonstrate.
Now, have they taken it one step further than that? In other words, beyond vocabulary, are they losing IQ points? I mean, is there something?
Well, that I don't know that he's gone there yet. I mean, this is just what that paper was about, was looking at vocabulary development. But vocabulary development is correlated with IQ. You know, if you in the test like the Wechsler test, your score in terms of vocabulary is very important as part of the overall score on IQ. So it's an important thing. And they also, there's recent research out that shows that for every hour of video game made, it is also predictive of by age 7 attention deficit disorder. So I don't remember what the exact numbers were, but basically they've been able to show that if your young child is playing games in excess of whatever that limit was, that they are much more at risk of being diagnosed with attention deficit disorder in elementary school.
Would that be true attention deficit disorder, or would it be conditioned?
An artifact.
Right.
It is essentially an artifact.
Right.
It's an artifact of a brain that has not been able to develop adequate attentional skills.
Okay. All right. Well, I was also curious, if you already have a child that is spending, that you think is too much time on gaming or on the internet, you know, you start getting those power struggles, especially with the teeny boppers and the teenagers, and that of trying to get them off and cut down their time, what would your recommendations for a parent? What should they do?
Well, I think, you know, we kind of walk parents through a protocol that we recommend in terms of having a family meeting, discussing the problem that we're seeing, and trying to engage the teen in coming up with an appropriate solution to this, because if you can get the teen's buy-in, that's going to work better. But ultimately, you your position as a parent needs to be, what's happening is not okay, and what is, once we agree on the amount of time that you're going to be spending, then there will be consequences if you are not able to stick to that, and the consequences are going to end up being first a warning, but if you go beyond that warning, then we will actually take the technology away.
Okay.
For an indefinite period of time until you have demonstrated a greater level of maturity and responsibility, and then we'll try it again. And if it doesn't work again, they'll go through the same routine.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to take a break. We are talking with Dr. Hillary Cash. The subject is internet addiction. We'll be back in a minute.
You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and...
25 years ago, to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you. All right, we're back. We're talking with Dr. Hillary Cash. We are talking about internet addiction, and she is the co-founder of Restart. It is the Internet Addiction Recovery Program. And we fortunately also have gotten some questions that have come in from our listeners. And we want everybody to know that we appreciate them very much for sending these in. We will always try to get to them. And in this particular case, they're pretty substantial. I think these are people that have received our information somehow over the internet. And I think that they really have some things that are making them really concerned. Mm-hmm. In regards to working with their children and as it relates to these things. Do you want to go with one?
Right. One of them I thought was interesting. It says, my friend's 14-year-old was just caught hacking into his teacher's computer to steal upcoming tests. The principal expelled him for a period of 1 month, and as we are close to the end of the school year, my friends are in a panic that he will fail and be held back. They are not taking very seriously what he has done, but instead are angry at the school. Have you heard of this type of issue where teens are becoming so sophisticated in technology that they're, you know, doing things they're not supposed to be doing?
I think this happens a great deal, that our teenagers in general are well ahead of us in their sophistication with computer technology. And so, yes, I hear about these kinds of stories a great deal, whether it's hacking a... you know, through a parent's attempt to be administrator, let's say, or put net nanny or some other kind of device on a computer. Teens are often very, very savvy at getting around those things.
Mm-hmm. Would you think this comes in part that the parents should be checking what the student's doing online and with their computer and checking periodically and randomly and watching over the shoulder at times, maybe?
Yes, I'm a great advocate of monitoring software on computers. And there are quite a few out there, and there are some that I think are more user-friendly than others. And I used one that was called Spectre Pro, and I put that on my own home computer when my son was 16, and I let him know it was there, that I would be, you know, periodically checking to see what he'd been up to, and I told him, this computer is not private. If you want to have a private conversation, you've got to go, you know, call somebody and have a private conversation or go see them in person. But here it's not private. I can see absolutely everything you do on this computer.
Well,
it really helped him, you know, mind his P's and Q's.
Well, I find, too, sometimes teens forget. They get so wrapped up in the conversation or they start doing things and they totally forget that mom and dad have access to what they're doing.
Exactly. Yeah, in fact, yeah, as you were talking about that, it reminded me in regards to a case that we were working with a young man that had run away, and apparently he had forgotten that his parents had a program like that. And so he still accessed his account from a different location when he ran away. And he posted pictures of a party that he was at with some friends where it showed that they were drinking, that they were smoking marijuana. There was a lot of things going on, and I felt the same way. I thought, well, doesn't he remember that that the parents have access to all of this?
Well, those frontal lobes aren't well developed yet, so they do forget things like that.
Right. You know, and another thing that in regards to that particular question, and I don't know that I'm necessarily asking you a question about this, but in this situation, I think we also have a problem with the parents blaming the school. I mean, at this point in time, it's like, you know, the 14-year-old hacked into the teacher's computer to steal upcoming tests, which was obviously, you know, a crime. It's a form of cheating. To be expelled for a month, I don't think that that's all that bad. But for parents to then decide that they're now going to be angry at the school for punishing their child, I think that's a whole other problem we've got.
Something I guess I would like to comment on here is my experience has been that there parenting trends that I'm seeing are in the direction of parents really bending over backward to protect their kids, sort of spoil their kids, give their kids what they want, please their kids, be friends and buddies with their kids. And when parents do that, they really are losing track of what their function is as parents. And so in this instance, this child did something wrong and is paying the natural consequences for his choice. And it's the best teaching moment in the world for this kid, right? And so when the parents are coming in and being mad at the school for doing what the school rightly should do, the parents are stepping over into that realm of what I consider very codependent and enabling behavior and thinking, which will not serve the kid well in the long run at all. They need to really be viewing this as a time to be as tough as they need to be in order to, well, within healthy boundaries. When I'm saying tough, I'm talking about tough love, where you let there be consequences to bad choices.
Exactly. And the consequences may not necessarily be exactly what we think they should be as a parent. But guess what? When that child is out in the real world as an adult, the consequences aren't going to be exactly what they think they should be either. So this is a good way to learn it. I agree. I think it's a great learning experience. And at that point, the parents need to, maybe they tell their child, this is how you're going to learn.
This is what happens in life,
and I'll bet you're not going to do it again.
When parents don't do that with their kids, those are the kids that end up as young adults coming out to Restart, our treatment facility. And I would say it is a universal theme with all of these young adults who are between 18 and 28 so far, that they have simply been protected from the consequences of their actions by their overly codependent, enabling parents. So it's such a mistake.
Right. I see that a lot in my own practice of seeing parents come in and trying to protect the kids and trying to understand this is a natural consequence. Why is it so important to protect your child from the natural consequences of that child's actions?
Right.
And it's sometimes like beating a dead horse or something. It's like it's not getting through on how important it is for them to step up and go, this is what happens when you do A, B happens. If you chose to do C, then B would not have happened.
That's right.
And if parents could be helped to see what the long-term consequences are in terms of who that child becomes and the attitudes that that child would take into the world. You know, if the parents let there be consequences to the bad choices versus if the parents protect them from consequences. Because one will build character in a good way and the other will build character in a pretty negative way.
Absolutely. Now we've got another question that has come in. This one says, I believe a child's brain is in critical development during their preteen and teen years. I have read that some brain dysfunctions / mental disorders are being attributed to overuse of computers and too much time spent online. Do you believe these technologies and activity is negatively affecting a young person's reasoning and or learning capabilities?
And yes, absolutely. I think the evidence is very clear that in excess, again, in moderation, I think it's all right as long as the time and content is appropriate, that that's not going to interfere with healthy child development on in many realms. But it, once it becomes excessive and it's inappropriate content, then yes, I think it has a profoundly negative impact on child development. And this is in the realm of intellectual and creative development, physical development, emotional intelligence development, social skills development, sexual development. All of these are areas that can be adversely affected.
Okay. Now, and I noticed a little bit earlier, you mentioned Restart, your Internet Addiction Recovery Program. Can you give us an example of maybe a severe case or someone that you've treated? They're obviously not giving their name, but at the same time, give us an idea of the types of things you were treating at this program.
Well, it's mostly men, young men, who are coming, although we've had some young women who were gamers as well. For the most part, these young adults are highly risk averse. They have, which is an interesting contrast to the adults, young adults of their same age who are into drugs and alcohol. They tend to be risk takers. Our population tends to be risk averse. And I think this is because they've been indoors behind a screen for so much of their lives that they are actually pretty uncomfortable out in the world. They're not resourceful, not particularly savvy about how the world works. They often come to us without really very basic life skills about how do you cook, how do you go shopping for food, how do you do your laundry. And shocking as that may be to many listeners, this ignorance on the part of these young people is engendered by parents doing that enabling behavior that I was talking about. So that's very typical for them. And so what they've been doing throughout their childhood when they weren't actually in school and studying, they were home, their free time was spent for the most part playing games in front of a computer or generally surfing. Mm-hmm. And so these young adults most of them have never dated. They're handling their sexual drives by accessing pornography and getting a sexual release that way. And so by the time they come to us, they are uncomfortable in the world. They're uncomfortable around people. They have poor social skills, and their dating, their ability to date and connect in a romantic way and a sexual way with someone else has been curtailed. And so they've got a lot of catching up to do.
Now, walk us through a little bit of some of the things that you are now taking these young men through to sort of, I guess, retrain them. I mean, it sounds like you need to literally start from square one and teach them social skills and literally how to interact with other human beings without using a computer.
That is our mission.
Well, I mean, explain to us a little bit about how you're doing that.
When they come to us, they are going to enter a 45-day period without any access to digital technology. And by the way, many of them stay longer than 45 days. It's just that that's a minimum stay. And during that time, they are, the first 3 weeks is a time when their brains are starting to put back the receptors that can pick up the neurochemicals like dopamine and other neurochemicals. So they are in withdrawal symptoms for the first 2 or 3 weeks. They're anxious and uncomfortable and irritable and mad about being there, even though they're there voluntarily. They're still mad about being there. They often don't sleep well. They're bored, incredibly bored. They just don't know what to do with themselves without, you know, a screen to interact with. And then, and while they're in that first 3 week period, we're doing an ongoing assessment with them because we're trying to understand what has driven the addiction? What are those painful things that they've been seeking escape from? And some of them have come without being properly diagnosed. A number of them have had Asperger's, but it's never been diagnosed. So we can do that diagnosing. If they need medication, we would not even approach that unless they already come on medication. We won't mess with that. But if they come without being on medication, we're not going to assume they need it just because they're highly anxious or depressed. Mm-hmm. Instead, we're going to wait to see how they start feeling after about 3 or 4 weeks with us. Because often, anxiety and depression begin to go away, kind of evaporating, once the brain starts to normalize. So there's that period away from the technology. They're living in a small, intimate environment of only, it's a 6-bed facility, and then there's a family that lives there. Cosette, who's a clinical social worker, lives there with her family upstairs, and then these residents are downstairs. And in that intimate environment, they're learning, you know, they have daily opportunity to interact with each other, and they have a bedroom with another person in the bedroom with them. And so they begin to have the opportunity to learn through face-to-face interaction, get more and more comfortable with that. Every day, Monday through Friday, they're having groups that are psychoeducational, either group or individual psychotherapy. We take them for CrossFit training so that they can start to reconnect with their bodies and build up some strength. Many of them are very underdeveloped physically. We have a yoga instructor come and teach them yoga. We have a meditation instructor who comes and leads them in meditation. And the reason for the yoga and the meditation is to teach them how to be mindful,
right,
how to be attuned to themselves, how to begin to know what they feel their feelings, and cope with their feelings in a new way rather than escaping the feelings, be able to observe the feelings. And so these are all examples of what we teach them. They, in the beginning of the day, you know, chores have to be done, so there are animals there. They feed animals, they clean the house, they make up their beds, and so forth.
So it's not really unlike other addictions treatment. You're working on all the same detoxification and going through with the withdrawals, learning new skills on how to cope in their environment in the world in a healthier way.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time here, but I did want to make sure that we got your website. If people want more information, your website is www.netaddictionrecovery.com. So people could check out your website and find out more about your wonderful program, Restart, Internet Addiction Recovery Program. Also, not to forget your book that you did, Video Games and Your Kids, How Parents Stay in Control. And today, we were talking to Dr. Hillary Cash, and thank you so much for being with us today. This is such an important topic as the addictions of Internet addictions, whether it be pornography or gaming or whatever it is that's interfering with people's lives, is becoming so abundant in our society today. So thank you. We really appreciate you being here.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right, and thank you. And for everybody out there, thank you for your questions. If we didn't get to them, we will try to get them to Dr. Cash and get them answered, and we'll shoot it out in our next press release. Everybody have a great week.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.